Tech Talk with Jess Kelly. This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome along to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, we'll look at the stance of the US presidential candidates on tech and what a red or blue win could mean for the industry. Plus your midfwee app, Nua Kula Kahar, and as ever, I'll answer your tech questions. If you want to get in touch, you can do so at any stage. Drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. But we're going to start this week with the US presidential election. I have found myself glued to the news, the updates, and unfortunately, the hot takes online. But as Kamala Harris steps forward as the Democratic nominee, we're going to take a look at what both she and Donald Trump have said about the tech sector. Anthony Ha is the weekend editor at TechCrunch based in New York, and he is with me now. Anthony, it's great to have you on the show. It's obviously been a pretty historic week in terms of the US presidential elections. This month alone has seen some very dramatic events, from the attempted assassination of former President Donald Trump, the dropping of cases against him. We had the Republican National Convention. And then, of course, President Joe Biden has withdrawn from the race. VP Kamala Harris is now front and center for the Democrats. But what do we know about her stance on the tech sector? Like, I know that she's from the Bay Area in San Francisco, which is a tech hotbed. But do we know anything more about her views and opinions?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me. I think that my sense is that Harris's stance on technology has definitely evolved over the years, in the same way that I think the U.S. government's stance has evolved. You know, as you mentioned, she came up, her early political career was in the San Francisco Bay Area. She was then California's attorney general. And in those roles, she certainly has, you know, taken positions to regulate technology or control technology. But in general, she's been a cheerleader for the industry. A lot of her biggest supporters came from the industry, and critics of the tech industry have pointed out that, you know, the, you know, companies like Facebook and Google really kind of continued growing and came to dominate the US economy in a lot of ways while she was attorney general, and she didn't necessarily do a lot to control that. But, you know, I think as particularly after the 2016 election, she became a senator, there was a lot of questions about misinformation. And then I think she started to take more of a critical tone, asking about misinformation on Facebook and other platforms. And then as vice president under Joe Biden, she has, you know, I think taken the lead on AI, and there hasn't necessarily been a lot of strong regulation on that yet, but she's been kind of the face of efforts to, you know, put out this executive order to get, you know, voluntary agreements from the major AI developers to get them to report, to report on, you know, the results of their testing and things like that. So in general, I think she has taken more of an aggressive stance as time has gone on, but still not that aggressive.
We know that President Biden has had a long-standing stance on big tech. He's repeatedly said for many years that there is need for stronger regulation and that manners needs to be put on the sector as a whole. Like, he is one of the, and has been for many years now, one of the most outspoken on big tech. Have we heard anything as strong or as stark, like relating to that or even in tune with that, from Kamala Harris in recent years?
Not in the recent past. I think that she, you know, when there's specific controversy, she'll often respond to it. But I think the framing that she has often suggested is that, you know, I think in that they're sometimes seen as this tension between kind of innovation and regulation. And the needle that she seems to be trying to thread with her statements is to say that, you know, having some degree of regulation actually helps the industry and keeps things safer for Americans. And so I think she you don't see her doing kind of, again, it depends on what you're comparing her to, but I think a lot of her biggest discussions of technology and big tech came when she was, you know, in her previous run for president in 2020. And that was also a race that Senator Elizabeth Warren was running in. And so a lot of that conversation was driven by Senator Warren, who was, you know, a huge opponent of big tech, really, you know, advocated for breaking up the companies. And in that context, you know, Harris said that we should regulate the companies, particularly around privacy, but did not call for any kind of breakup.
Yeah, it's definitely one to watch because, as we're going to talk about later in the show, Mark Zuckerberg this week said that the company, his company, is going to stay out of the election as much as possible and that he as an individual is going to refrain from sharing his own personal views. But obviously, there are very high profile executives in the world of tech that have taken an entirely different approach. I'm curious, from an American voter's point of view, how much weight, if any, do the views of Zuckerberg and Musk and so on hold when it comes to their thinking and ultimately their voting?
My sense is that, I mean, Musk is a little bit of an unusual case because I think he has a kind of unique cult of personality around him. And I don't think necessarily that the average American voter is going to change their vote, but there's a group of people who pay attention to everything he says. And I think not necessarily that they slavishly follow him, but they take it very seriously. And I think certainly Musk saying that he supports Trump, I think will carry a weight with some people. I think in general, you know, people take what the tech CEO seriously in the sense that they take what any kind of business leader takes seriously. But I think there's also a little bit of suspicion around that. And I think, the other question is not just, will people vote a certain way because Elon Musk or Mark Zuckerberg says, you know, they're going to support someone, but also these are the platforms that they control. This is where we have our conversations about the election. And so if Elon Musk says he supports Trump, what does that mean for people who support Harris on X, formerly Twitter?
We know that Trump is an active social media user. We know about Truth Social. But do we know what his overarching view on the tech sector is as a whole? Like, I've been trying to read up as much as possible, and it's hard to get a clear stance, even on things like, you know, the threat or opportunity of AI. Like, is that just me, or am I missing something? Does he have a clear policy or attitude towards the technology sector?
I mean, I think that it can generally be hard to find a kind of clear ideological through line in Trump's statements on any issue. On technology, I think it's sort of opportunistic, and it seems to depend on who's supporting him in the moment, where his strongest backing is. I think, you know, on two issues, I think it depends on what issue within tech you're talking about. So, for example, on crypto, that's something he's said repeatedly, that he's very, very pro-crypto, doesn't want to regulate crypto. And so I think he's gotten some support from the industry's biggest fans there. On, you know, obviously there's been a lot of discussion about TikTok, and that was an interesting one because when he was president, he was actually very vocal and tried to push through this TikTok ban, which then ultimately got passed under President Biden. And then he's actually become an opponent of the TikTok ban because he basically says he hates Facebook, the parent company Meta, and Facebook, Instagram, all those channels so much that he thinks that it's important to have TikTok there as a way to counterbalance them.
We know that his attitudes towards some of the Chinese companies have had consequences, Huawei being a prime example of that. Obviously, there are consequences from the views and the decisions made by the President of the United States. It's an incredibly powerful role. But is there a clear decision or, sorry, is there a clear picture as to whether a Democratic or Republican president would be better for the sector as a whole?
I don't think there's a very clear answer to that. I mean, I think one indication of that sort of lack of clarity is just the fact that the industry itself, I don't think, obviously some of the highest profile announcements recently about support have come from the red side, people who are supporting Trump, but you know, Silicon Valley and the Bay Area are sort of historically Democratic supporting, and I don't think that's necessarily changed, even though maybe there's been a little bit of a swing to the right. And I think that the certainly, I mean, broadly speaking, right, there's going to be more regulation under a Democratic administration than a Republican one. But how much it's actually going to target the tech industry, I think, is not clear. And, you know, certainly, you know, Vice President Harris probably would be more open to the idea of regulating parts of the tech industry. But, you know, the thing about certainly the US government is there's a lot of things that make it onto a platform, and then a relatively small percentage of them actually get turned into law. So whether or not this would be a priority for a Harris administration, I don't know. I think certainly under a Trump administration, you're going to see less interest in regulating the tech industry, but there are going to be certain areas. I mean, you know, we've seen with Republicans in general, they really like to bring social media CEOs, you know, into DC to kind of grill them about whether or not there's supposed censorship of conservatives on their platforms. They also, you know, have, I think there's sort of a little bit of a bipartisan skepticism about Chinese tech, but I think it's sort of more vocal and more intense on the conservative side. So those are two areas where even if conservatives are generally less inclined to regulate tech, you might still see a lot of activity.
The final area I want to hit upon is how the election is playing out on social media. If we look back on, say, the last four presidential elections alone in the US, social media has played such a pivotal role. And that obviously includes the good, the bad, and the ugly. What's your view or your assessment of how it's playing out this time around? Like, are key conversations still happening on social, or is it a case that, you know, one side is shouting louder than the other, therefore it's not a full representation of the political landscape in America?
I mean, I think that you know, it sort of goes up and down, but certainly, you know, an election year is always going to lead to a lot more political discussion on social media. If anything's changed, I think that previously, the, you know, political discussion tended to center on Twitter, at least from the politicians and journalists themselves. I think maybe everyday Americans, it might still happen more on Facebook or on other platforms. And then, of course, you know, TikTok is going to play a big role in this one as well. And what's really seems to have happened in the last few years is that conversation has fragmented more. And so the conversation that you're going to see on X, again, which is what used to be Twitter, on TikTok, and then on Instagram, and then on Blue Sky, and then on Threads. Like, these are all going to be separate conversations. I think what's been striking to me is, you know, the fact that President Biden announced that he's not going to run again first on X, which I think has lost some of the audience that it had before Musk bought it, but it really still is the center of the political conversation. So on the one hand, a lot of fragmentation, very different kinds of conversations happening on different platforms. On the other hand, X is still where, you know, the politicians and the journalists are still making their announcements. It's where they're posting first and where they're checking first.
And finally, in the wake of the assassination attempt on former President Trump, I noticed a massive wave of mis and disinformation floating around, even in my own social timelines. From your point of view, I mean, has there been enough conversation and education about misinformation over the last wee while that leaves you feeling more confident and optimistic when it comes to people's understanding this time around?
I think there's certainly been a lot of conversation about it. I don't know that it's made a huge difference. I think they're, you know, the platforms, frankly, are a little bit afraid of getting too involved. Like you said, you know, Zuckerberg says he doesn't really want Meta to be involved in the election this year. And I think not involved in this case often means kind of anything goes. I mean, and that's not literally true. I think they still have rules and they'll take down certain content, but I think they want to be as, to look as impartial as possible by not stepping in. And I think, you know, part of the challenge, of course, is that when we talk about misinformation, that's also something that we see through our own kind of ideological and partisan lenses. So what I think is misinformation, a different person might say is just, you know, objective truth, and they might think that I'm brainwashed. And so I think that particularly after 2016 and 2020, after COVID, the platform, you know, the social media platforms tried to get more involved and to do more to control the kind of misinformation on their platform. And it feels like this time around, they're a little bit more kind of like giving up is a strong word for it. But I think they've felt a little burned and are going to take less of a heavy hand this time around.
Okay, well, look, needless to say, we will be watching it all unfold over the coming weeks and months with great interest. But for the moment, Anthony Ha, weekend editor with TechCrunch, thank you so much for joining us here on News Talk.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, the amount of noise around this election, I think, is only going to increase. Now, I found the New York Times Daily podcast, or The Daily, to be an excellent way to digest and understand what's going on. If you're not already subscribed, jump on it right away. Just search for The Daily. It's fantastic. They're very rarely longer than 30 minutes, but it's just a really good way to get a summation of what's going on. Right. When we come back here on News Talk, we're going to hear about Apnua Coolagar.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
I hate to be the bad guy here, but I'm going to need a firm date.
I thought you understood that this process was going to be long.
Absolutely. But it has been 3 years. And we have put in about $140 million, so I think that Wade is getting a little bit frustrated.
Wade, if you're not the one calling the shots, then maybe I should just give Wade a call.
We can skip the call, because I'm here.
Okay, well, I said I could handle it.
Can you guys give us a moment?
Isn't that comfy?
It's fine. So, Elizabeth, we're building these wellness centers in our stores. Two in Arizona, one in Palo Alto.
I explained that.
Yeah,
that this
you've explained.
Devices.
Except there's nothing to explain, because we don't have this. So here's my question. When do we get it?
Wade, we care deeply about our partnership, and we're anxious to put our best foot forward.
And what's the timeline for we are anxious to put our best foot forward? Because I've got one. You want to hear it? Hmm? September.
September.
6 months from now. No more breaks, no more extensions.
We'll be ready in September. Sunny's spearheading operations.
Yeah, that is a snippet of The Dropout, starring Amanda Seyfried as Elizabeth Holmes. And the story of Elizabeth Holmes and her company Theranos is the feature of the book pick for our book club. The book is called Bad Blood by John Kerryrew. It's one of my favourite books, be that tech or non-tech, for quite some time. I read it a number of years ago, but I chose it as our book club pick for this month, next month, that's the one. Cameron and Kira will be back with us in 2 weeks' time to review it. So if you want to get involved, it's called Bad Blood by John Kerryrew. Get reading, and we will have that discussion in 2 weeks' time. I asked on last week's show for your favourite sci-fi books, and George Hogan was on with his favourite one, which is Robert Heinlein, Stranger in a Strange Land. I haven't read it. I haven't heard about it, to be completely honest, but it is now on my list of books to read. If there's anything else that I should add, please do drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com. Bernard was also in touch, and he suggested that we read The Amazing Story of Quantum Mechanics as one of our book club picks. So I will share that on with Cameron and Kira and let them decide. Now, TG Car, as many of you know, offers a wide variety of content. Oscar Ilga, Sarah Nashka, which means free, and they are growing their portfolio to include a new app dedicated to children's content via Coolagar. Karina Ferreter, Banishdoor Canale, Coolagar is with me now. Karina, it's great to have you on the show. As listeners may know, I went to a Gael school. My niece is in a Gael school. The Irish language is something that's really important to me, and it's been fantastic to see the investment that's gone into the Irish language across all platforms over the last number of years. Can you just tell me a little bit about the strategy and the vision from the Kula Kahar point of view, and what it is and who it is that you're targeting here?
Absolutely. Well done you, by the way. It's great to see advocates of the language. But I suppose Kula Kahar lives under TG Kahar. So Kula Kahar would actually be targeted at the younger age group. We're talking from zero up until the age of 12. It's a service, I suppose, in terms of we're providing Irish language content for this age group specifically, although all eyeballs are more than welcome to watch Kula Kahar Aumar Bay. I suppose our mission and the reason we're promoting Kula Kahar is or why we're here is because it's all about, I suppose, the future of the language. Number one, we are an entertainment channel, a TV station, a broadcaster. So we provide content which is entertaining for the age group. But I suppose the stronger, I suppose, niche side of this is that our mission is to keep the language alive and particularly interesting and particularly important for the Kula Kahar audience is because they are actually the future of the language. So if we're not nurturing and trying to get them to watch our content at this stage, we might not catch them when they're older, I suppose. So it's very important to kind of, as they say in Irish, Iad a Bheála, so to entice them in to watch our amazing content from a younger age.
Yeah, and this is something that gets bandied about a little bit, and we won't get into the whole Irish language debate because it just enrages me. But one of the things that I would concede and accept is that, you know, as a Gaelgor, I would love more opportunities to use my Cúpla Focal every single day. And I think it's about ensuring that there are services there to cater and to meet people where they are. So whether that is using the Duolingo app to enhance your Cúpla Focal, or even if you say Gurv Mogath in a shop and so on. But the services offered by TG Kahar from a sporting point of view, Osgaelga, are fantastic. And again, we know that there are loads of kids around this country going to Gael Scullina. So having content that is catered to them where and when they want makes sense from a business point of view as well as from a language point of view.
Absolutely. And, you know, outside of TG Kahar, there are so many, like you mentioned, Duolingo, who are doing a fascinating job. You know, bring it right down to the Irish colleges, look at Lurgan and all the different Irish colleges around the country, and you'd see ages from 13 up, and they're being inspired in terms of the language and culture and keeping it alive. So it's critical, it's really important. For us, I suppose, as well, it's the point you mentioned there of you know, where are they at? Because had we launched Kula Kahar channel on its own in 1996 when we launched TG Kahar, it was way easier back then when you just switch on one channel and you broadcast out. Whereas now so much has changed, you know, we have the channel, yes, and it's very important in terms of visibility and placement that it sits in with other big broadcasters. So, for example, you know, you go into Sky Glass and you'll see Kula Kahar sitting with RTE Junior, you see it sitting with Cartoon Network. But as well as that, it doesn't stop there because today children are everywhere. You know, there's so much noise, there's so many options. So we put a lot of work into figuring out where are the important places for us to find our audience. And, you know, instead of expecting them to come to us, that we are where we're meeting them where they are. Mm-hmm. You can't do everything, you know, budget comes into things, resource comes into things. So I suppose it's bit by bit, we're hacking away at it. You know, we had a website, we have our channel, we're bit by bit adding to all the various platforms, you know, like your Skies and your Airs and Virgin Media and all of them, and making sure Kula Kahar is present there. But on top of that, you know, we want Kula Kahar to be 24/7. So we recently, we have a website which you can watch the channel live on. We upgraded our app recently as well in terms of adding new features. And one of those features is that you can actually watch the channel via the app, no more than the Smart TV apps, which we've launched. Things like downloading, making things easy, live streaming, the search functionality. Like, unfortunately, that work never ends because you have to keep at it. You have to keep improving it. You know, you are in competition with the big wigs in terms of content. So it's important to really maybe, I suppose, do small chunks, but do them well and improve them. So, you know, there's an awful lot of work. there. And unfortunately, we launched the channel. The work doesn't stop there. It only begins, really.
And ohave on apte like mátha gohan no mátha tabloid egg pasha no tish bohor agus currenti an app air on gohan no air an tabloid cairdid na rodi a feckin sheed agus conas a denin sheed like spreelesh no conas a fine sheed na chloricus zirilla air an app.
So tán after fall filaher ni go cuardach ian of air Play Store nu iOS air coola cahar tukasha suas. Few van dynian fa cuardach air TG cahar heinig tuk coola cahar suas marawa. Is feidir lat tachter over coola cahar air app TG cahar. Ach an tain buntash to lecan coola cahar islodal na gavilcha wadni savol to ohave an over thar fallin cha. So nor hen tu stach sa app mar hampla is feid lat rau nu a yen of nu feid lat tush mor is a yen of gwil den an of fui ish fi le so mar hampla to gwil den an of kahed shoro fa stach sa app und den isin o hev in over ta felu noch da ish rupi fui she agus ni ekig an on den og over beidet a vach dide he locht viach na vaid ni sinne so nor hen tu stach sa app heinig is a spas cart. Tá sé sé an aske ní réon chosta a buint leis spáin for chuit an sin na srehanna éagsúla chomáile sin má hén túisteach a síomh mar hapla tá ábhar breise ó héh caineal YouTube lin a ríis de crothú spás nó poblbal sáháilte sa spás sin. Agus nó hén túisteach go mórhór é an appar de fón úair an tablet. Tá gné álan in sin go bhfuil tú ná íslódála ghéanamh rudaí, so tóg mar hapla gohfuil tú galir siad nó tá tú meachtar trosfada agus heastaat go bhacht de leanamh nó de fáiste ag fiochantar ábhairbéidir go bhfuil siad a fálam, go bhfuil siad a puca suas cúpla focal. Din íslódáil ar cúpla sreath nó cúpla clár agus beag ráha álan in sin don tros nó don siad.
Yeah, I think the point around the age restriction as you just mentioned there is really important. So again, for those, just to reiterate the point, if your child is, say, 4 years old, you can select content that's only relevant. So they're not going to land on any inappropriate content. And the distinction between the Chichi Kahar app, although you can access the Coola Kahar content on the Coola Kahar app, it's kind of like YouTube Kids or the kids section on Netflix. It's just prioritized for children. You mentioned there about kids who are learning Irish, and it's great for them to, you know, maybe download a few of the shows and have it on in the background. It's also a nice way for parents to pick up the Cúpla Focal as well. Like, I know a few of my friends who've got kids who are going to Gaelscoileanna or even English speaking schools, but they have the fear when it comes to the Irish homework because their language isn't maybe up to scratch. But it is a really nice way. I even find it with the sport as well. Just hearing it improves my Irish. It gets my brain thinking in Irish. Having it on, you do pick up bits and pieces by osmosis.
Oh, you do. I mean, I'm a fluent Irish speaker. I live in the Gaeltacht in Connemara. I'm originally from Corcoreena down in Kerry. I still, when I hear somebody from Donegal with a thick Donegal Irish dialect, I'll struggle sometimes. Well, I might struggle in terms of what they've said. But that said, you know, if I'm watching a programme, I'll get into the swing of it fairly quickly. So it is immersion. It is kind of just really kind of living in that live world of it's there. And we have a policy with our kids' content that we actually don't put English subtitles on purpose on them. Because for us, it's really on that whole immersion again and picking up, you know, if you learn two new words out of watching a 15-minute programme, fantastic, as opposed to watching the programme and looking at the English subtitles. So we only put Irish subtitles on certain content, not all, and, you know, obvious reasons, maybe content under the age of five where kids wouldn't be expected to be able to follow or read subtitles on screen. So it's fascinating. We do get a lot of parents who say they actually watch our cartoons or they'll watch some of the programs for a couple of reasons. Number one is that they're learning a couple of words, or number two, it's because they see kids, their own kids or maybe their friends' kids or family on some of our shows, which is amazing.
Yeah, no, look, it is brilliant. And as I said at the top, I think it's so important to have the language out there in multiple formats. And there's no excuse if you are interested in dipping in, utilising it fully, having a hybrid, whatever works. There is so much good stuff out there. And TG Cahar is such an excellent resource for it. But as you said, Karina, there are other outlets as well. Thank you so much for joining us. And as I said, you said, sorry, the app is available right now and it is completely free, correct?
Yeah, for the phone, your phone or your tablet is available now completely free. The app for the smart TVs, which is for your Google Home dongles and Sony TVs, and as well the Amazon service Fire TV, is available Cúil Chathair car free of charge as well.
All right, so Fodger, Míle Maggat as Ocht Ling on show Air News Talk.
Slán, bye bye.
Yeah, if you've never heard any of the kids' TV shows in Irish, I would highly recommend it. Here is just a snippet for you. This is Peppa Pig, Oscar Elga.
She matting vidiahan. Agus had daddy moch gilleach pepper neach.
Daddy, je how Jennif?
Ha me a leer pepper neach.
How Jennif fuanyonach?
Ha me a fitterach.
Oh.
Ha fitterach sporsal. Shuad, fiachir.
Gimmer a niwe.
Ha esrif. Kurt o vilen di chela is shake. Fiachad cwmig o na slw. Ho, 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 mae sio. Ys di ar ffawn leis yn nhw sy'n.
O, ha rydyg yn ciar eich mo fiel.
Ha dy fiel cias gylior. Cwm os dy fiachyn.
Chai a fe ianaf.
Fyr a yw'n y fôn yr oedd yn cwthrym o'ch iwsychyg, Y dolar y bicycle, na chwych y fiano. Hw ge bli ond ddic yn gos, mae chlwys yn y glwysydd.
Wow!
Now, obviously, you don't need me to explain, but that was Peppa Pig learning how to whistle in Irish. I know Peppa is quite divisive for people. Many parents I know absolutely hate it. But that's just one example of the cartoons and TV shows that are available in Irish. I'm always so impressed by the translations and the broad offering of programs as well that are available on Scoilge. So if your kid or, you know, somebody in the house is learning Irish, or maybe you just want to expose your children to the language, as Karina said, the Cúil Chathair app is totally free and you can download it on both iOS and Android devices. If you are a Gaeilge, and if there is an app or a digital service or something that you would recommend for people who want to use the language a bit more or engage with the language, will you drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com? This is something I'm genuinely passionate about. Obviously, we have Splunk here on Newstalk, hosted by Cuana Flaherty. That's a weekly show. It goes out on Friday nights at 10 o'clock, but you can also download the podcast. So if you just search for Splunk, S-P-L-A-N-C, you'll see a picture of Cuana Flaherty there. You hit subscribe, and that is a weekly magazine program. And what that means in plain English is that you've got a mix of news and current affairs. There's always great features. I know Emily Carule does a regular music slot, so they'll do a deep dive into an album or a song. There's also great sports coverage as well. So if you're looking to increase your Irish vocabulary, or if you want to consume more media, Oscar Elga, Splunk is available. It's every single week, a fresh episode there. And the topics are great. The guests are great. It's just a really, like, you're not compromising the quality because something is in Irish. And I think that's one of the things that I'm most proud of when it comes to Splunk. There are other great podcasts out there as well that are available, Oscar Elga. I mentioned Duolingo during my chat with Karina there. You can also put Gaeilge onto your phone. So if you use an iPhone or an Android phone, you can go into your settings. You can set your language as Irish. You can have your Gmail as Gaeilge. There are opportunities everywhere you look to use your language and to improve your use of the language. But if there's anything that you use that you want to put on my radar, as I said, the email address is techtalk@newstalk.com. Now, when we come back here on News Talk, I'm going to answer your tech questions.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to the final part of this week's Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. We're going to get to your questions in just a quick minute. But earlier in the show, we were chatting to Anthony Ha of TechCrunch about the US presidential election. And I referred to an interview that Meta's Mark Zuckerberg did earlier in the week. He was talking on the back of announcements about the company's ventures in the world of AI. But I want to bring you this little snippet. Take a listen.
I want to talk about the 2024 presidential election.
Okay.
Facebook has been a flashpoint in many elections mm-hmm. around the world. And you personally have been called out, most recently by former President Trump. This is a big election. What do you think is at stake?
Well, I mean, look, it's obviously a very important and it'll be a historic election. You know, I feel like I'm best positioned maybe to talk about what our role will be in it and what we're going to do. And look, I mean, the main thing that I hear from people is that they actually want to see less political content on our services because they come to our services to connect with people. So, you know, that's what we're going to do. We give people control over this, but we're generally trying to recommend less political content. So I think you're going to see our services play less of a role in this election than they have in the past. And personally, I'm also planning on not playing a significant role in the election. And I've done some stuff personally in the past. I'm not planning on doing that this time. And that includes, you know, not endorsing either of the candidates. Now, look, I mean, there's obviously a lot of crazy stuff going on in the world. I mean, the historic events over the last, like over the weekend. And I mean, on a personal note, it's, you know, I mean, seeing Donald Trump get up after getting shot in the face and pump his fist in the air with the American flag is one of the most badass things I've ever seen in my life. But, and I think, look, it's, at some level as an American, it's like hard to not get kind of emotional about that spirit. And that fight, and I think that that's why a lot of people like the guy. But look, I mean, we're living in a pretty crazy time, and I view our role here is to make it so that everyone can express their views on this stuff. But we're going to try to manage it so that way the politics doesn't drown out the human connection and the community, which is I think the main thing that people come to our services for, and. You know, we're not always going to get that right, but that's what we're going to try to do. And I think that that's probably the best role that we can play.
Yeah, that's Mark Zuckerberg in conversation with Emily Chang. What do you make of it? Is it enough for him to say that they're not going to be as involved when their tools are so vital in the political and news sphere? And do you think, like if you... I asked this question earlier in the show, but do you think people care about the political stances of the Mark Zuckerbergs, the Elon Musks, the Peter Thiels? Like, beyond the financial donation side of things, does it make a difference? Do celebrity and business executive views, do you think that they hold much weight and much water? Let me know what you think. techtalk@newstalk.com is the email address. John Fardy is here to preview this week's Screen Time. John, what's on the show this week?
So I'm delighted to say I start at the back end, but I'm so excited about this. Colm Tobin, who's one of my favourite writers and just a great guy to talk about anything, chats about his favourite movie. And the thing is, he was in here a few weeks ago on Pat Kenny and I talked to him about his favourite movie and I thought it was going to derail his interview with Pat because he's so into this movie. So I won't say what it is, but tune in. We're looking at the week's new releases, which include, of course, the big one, Deadpool and Wolverine. And then I'm looking at the life of Peter Sellers, who was a fascinating guy, who almost didn't exist. That was how deep he got into his characters. He kind of had a really unusual life. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So that's a lovely mixed bag. Is
a rattle bag, you might even say.
Oh, man, wee. I don't want to talk about Deadpool yet because I haven't seen it and I want to make up my own mind. I will listen with intrigue about your take on it, though, because some of the reviews have been very harsh.
Yeah, and some have been lauding it, you know.
So we might pick that one up again after I hear what you have to say. Two things I want to talk to you about. Ifrahane was, my dad was listening.
Throwing in a bit of the Gaelic there, are you?
Well, you clearly were listening to the show because in part two of the programme we did a bilingual interview with TG Carr, but, so it's obviously on my brain, but anyway, my dad was listening to you talking to Pat Kenny on your Boxed segment, which is every Thursday, correct and right? And you recently spoke about, is it Griselda?
Yeah, so on Netflix.
Dad and I were going, is it Grimelda? Like we kind of heard it, but it didn't land as a
Griselda. Name. It's my diction.
Okay, yeah, that's what the issue was. So we started watching it.
And?
So episode one was a little bit slow.
Oh, okay.
Hang on, before we go into that, just set the scene. Give us the top line. What is this about?
A true story. Now, it's fictionalized, but based on the world's biggest female cocaine dealer ever, who came from Colombia and worked out of Miami and became, it's like Breaking Bad. Mm. She started out as this woman who seems to want to have protected her family and stuff, and she left a pretty abusive situation, but then she became kind of Scarface, literally. But what I love about it is it's kind of Pulp Fiction-y. It's not making any big moral point. Well, maybe there is a bit about, you know, in the cocaine business, she wasn't taken seriously because she was a woman and it was the 70s. But it's straight ahead gangster fest. And Sofia Vergara, who people know from Modern Family, is brilliant in it.
She is incredible. That's the thing that jumped out at me. So when I saw she was in it, I was like, ooh. And she's a completely different character, obviously, to Modern Family.
Yes.
She wears it very well.
She does it very well. And it's just great. That's, and she was nominated for an Emmy last week. And it's the first time a woman of Latin origin, Latin descent, has been nominated in a drama series, which seems kind of shocking. Yeah.
So that's what we're watching.
That's great. Stick with it.
Okay. Yeah, no, because episode one, it's shot beautifully. The soundtrack is incredible. Yeah. Like, you get a real sense of it and it really does bring you in. So we are enjoying that at the moment. So thank you.
You're watching it with your dad?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're having a lovely little watch along.
Lovely.
And then the second thing I wanted to talk to you about, you and I were talking about the best documentaries of all time.
Yeah.
And the one that we kind of both got really buzzed about was the one about Senna.
Yeah.
The F1 driver.
Yeah.
And Netflix are bringing out a series around them. Now, I love Netflix.
Yeah.
I think they're great.
Yeah.
I love the protect. I'm nervous about whether or not it's going to be Stun Hun or not. What's your thoughts and feelings about, I suppose, when there is a documentary that's so beloved and then they get picked up and touched by TV dramas?
Well, I think that not just Netflix, who I'm also a big fan of, but I think TV makers are getting better at this. So I'll give you an example. Ripley on Netflix, right?
I've not seen that.
When I heard about this, I thought, this is a terrible idea, because that's a very successful movie from the 90s, right? With Matt Damon and Jude Law. And yet they turned it into this kind of Italian Fellini-esque brilliant drama. It might be the best show of the year so far. So similarly, Presumed Innocent on Apple TV, which you are or aren't watching?
I haven't seen it yet.
I think it's brilliant. And it just ended this week. They took a movie and turned it into a brilliant series that almost, like, it gets away from the movie. So if they can really reimagine the source material, it could work. And in this case, it's the life of someone well known. So the jury's out. I'm sorry to give you such a vague answer, but it might surprise us all. But I get what you're saying. It's hard to believe. Why would you touch it, given that stunning documentary that's out there that you call the greatest documentary ever made? I don't think you're far off. So I don't know what to tell you. I haven't seen it because it's not out yet. But, you know, I sound like a football pundit. It's a game of two halves, Jess. It could go either way, long ball, short ball. But it really could go either way. It could be brilliant or it could be a waste of time. And that's what I think you're worried about.
Yeah. Well, look, we will obviously reserve judgment until we do see it. But do stay tuned, because John will be here in just a few minutes with Screen Time. John, thanks so much.
Thank you.
All of that is on the way after 6 p.m. But let's get to some of your questions. First up this week, we have Tracy, who says, "Hey, Jess, I was wondering if you could recommend a pen to use with the Lenovo P11 second generation tablet. There are so many different reviews online with conflicting remarks that some work and some don't. I'm very confused. I've tried an Apple Pen and no joy, but a rubber thing at the end of a biro works, but it's no use." So Tracy, this is something that crops up time and again. So the Apple Pencil will only work with iPads. That's just the way they work. The rubber thing on top of a biro, yes, it will work, but it won't give you great precision. There are, and I know people don't like when I mention it, but Amazon has a whole host of them that work with Android tablets. So there's a brand called Metro. There's another brand called Miko, M-E-K-O, and they make them. You just need to be careful and sort of have an idea of the type of nib that you want. So if you want one for handwriting, for example, just be very specific about that. But you can get them. They pair very easily. They do the job. The handwriting recognition won't be as good as if you got an iPad and an Apple Pencil, but that's why they're more expensive. So yeah, I do hope that helps. The two brands that I mentioned there, Metro
and then Meko, M-E-K-O. One of those will definitely do the job for you. Liam messaged me on Instagram asking, can you explain how the Vodafone One number works? I like the idea of just being out with my watch, but not sure if it's worth it, how it's billed, etc. This is something that I was curious about. I've heard the ads for it here on News Talk over the last little while. So I got onto Vodafone and Fran Wearty from the team jumped on a Zoom call with me earlier in the week to explain.
Yeah, simply put, it connects your cellular smartwatch to the Vodafone network without having to actually have your phone nearby. Using the kind of eSIM technology, One Number allows people to use their mobile plan on their smartwatch. It gives people the freedom to leave the house, maybe go for a walk or run without their phone. You can still answer calls, send messages, and listen to music the exact same way that you did without your phone. Many of your listeners may be iPhone users as well. And the good news is we recently announced that Vodafone are currently the only network providers in Ireland to exclusively support One Number for Apple Watch and the iPhone as well.
In terms of the setup and so on, if someone is a Vodafone customer already and they have the compatible devices, so the particular watches that work and the particular phones and so on, is it just added on to their monthly bill or is it something separate entirely?
Yeah, this is really easy. So this is available for all Vodafone bill pay customers who already have a compatible cellular watch. You can sign up to One Number as a no contract add-on for €5 per month. Even better, customers who do sign up before December will receive 3 free-month service on us. There's no contract associated with it, and customers can cancel the One Number at any time. Now, in terms of the range of devices that we offer support for, they include Apple, Samsung, and Xiaomi. The good news is Vodafone do have plans to extend to other devices over the coming months, so we'll be making announcements on that very soon.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so if Liam or anyone wants to get on it, I assume they just get onto Vodafone, suss it out, and it's painless enough?
Absolutely. So we'd encourage anybody who does have a smartwatch or is maybe looking for one, go to Vodafone.ie or go in store and we can help you set up from there.
Yeah, that was Fran Wearty of Vodafone answering Liam's question on the Vodafone One Number. Again, if you have any tech questions that you want answered, if I can't do them, I will do what I did there and I will get on to the experts and get the answers for you. The email address, as ever, is techtalk@newstalk.com. But that's it from me this week. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back in full on the News Talk app powered by Go Loud. I'm actually on a week off. I'm very excited. I'm going to just shut down for a few days. But we will have a brand new episode of Tech Talk for you next Saturday at 5 p.m. Or if you subscribe to the podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, a brand new episode will land in your feed on Friday at noon. But that's it. I will chat to you when I'm back.